Hi, this is Tracy with Spiritual Not Religious, and for the first time today, I am recording from the woods, in the middle of the woods with no Wi-Fi. I had assumed that I wouldn't be able to record when I was not at Wi-Fi, but it turns out I can, so let's see how this goes. This will be, because if I can do that, that's super great, because then I can go on a little hike and do my podcast. This is a topic today that I have been writing a lot of notes about and doing a lot of thinking about, because I really want to address the topic of psychic phenomena, but I want it to be a little deeper and hopefully a little more nuanced than some of those kinds of that sometimes that topic can be a little, I don't know how to say, but maybe commercialized. I don't know if that's quite what I mean, but, or just kind of, I guess basically what I want to do, what I want to address, one major part is reducing the sort of fearfulness and superstition around psychic experiences, because any time when something cultivates a feeling of fear, it by definition creates blockages to the flow of insight, because fear is the fundamental blockage to the flow of the divine. It's the way in which free will gets in the way of experiencing inner connection with the all that is at its most fundamental, rudimentary level. Fear is what is what blocks us, what blocks the flow of insight. And so because there's a lot of fear and distrust and superstition around psychic experiences, it's a sort of a, you know, it's the very thing that one would want to have unfettered flow about, and there's a lot of fettering going on with it. So one thing I liked in A Course of Miracles, there actually is a, in the workbook for teachers or the, yeah, there's the workbook for students and workbook for teachers. And in the workbook for teachers part, one of the questions that is addressed is there basically, is it valuable or useful to develop psychic abilities, or are psychic abilities helpful to have? And I'd really point you to that chapter in A Course in Miracles as a really great, I think they did a great job describing my perspective on that. But what to basically my perspective on it is that it's an ability and it's useful, but it isn't. You know, it's nothing to be afraid of. But it's also not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily increase a person's enlightenment in and of itself. But read the chapter in A Course in Miracles. It's really good. What it said was, one of the things that I wrote down that I thought was a particularly helpful thing is it said there are no unnatural abilities, meaning there's nothing unnatural about psychic abilities. People do have psychic abilities, some people more than others, some people innately more gifted in that way, and also one can develop those gifts in the same way that some people are sort of maybe prodigies in music, but almost anyone could learn to play an instrument. So for some people, learning to play an instrument will be more challenging, and some people it'll just be like, oh, there's an instrument, bam. But those, in the same way at a prodigy in music is the exception, a prodigy in psychic phenomena is also the exception. So, but because people have a lot of sort of, like I would call superstitious attitudes towards psychic phenomena, people don't think to really develop those skills in the same way that they would learn to play an instrument, even if they aren't a musical prodigy. And then the prodigies, the psychic prodigies, you might say, often develop their own kind of weird beliefs about their own experience because they don't have any cultural context to use them, cultural or theoretical framework that is free of fears. And when I also want to say what I mean by superstitious, because I've used that word a couple times. And what I mean by superstitious is feeling that something is so delicate and easy to mess up, and that messing it up will be dangerous. The belief that it's dangerous is, and the fear that that cultivates is what basically causes the problems itself. It's the fear that, in the same way, like if you could one day, let's say you couldn't hear very well, and then you got a hearing aid, and then you could hear better, it wouldn't really make sense to be afraid because, oh, suddenly I can hear better, because you expect to be able to hear better. So in the same way with psychic phenomena, if you have the sense that the ability to grasp things that are not obvious to the most basic senses, if you have that expectation that you should be able to perceive more, then when you do, you aren't necessarily afraid. Plus, in the hearing analogy, we have a lot of scientific understanding of what the mechanisms of hearing are. So if a machine like a hearing aid helps you to hear better, you trust, even if you don't yourself entirely understand the mechanism, you trust that it is not magical or dangerous. By the same token, if you gave a hearing aid to a person who was hard of hearing 1,000 years ago, and suddenly they could hear better, they would at minimum be quite startled, and they might be even fearful. Like, what is this little strange plastic demon you put in my ear that makes me hear better, you know? So it's the lack of understanding about some of the ways, the fundamental principles, a operational theory around psychic abilities that causes, that creates, is part of what creates the fear around it. So today what I want to do is talk about a theoretical framework to better understand how it is that psychic experiences exist. And once you have a framework for it and reduce the fear around it, it's very likely that you will unblock some of the blockages that keep you from having more acuity in those experiences, sort of sharpen your senses, sharpen your, what people like to call the sixth sense, right? But I don't really call it the sixth sense, because I think it's really, it's on a spectrum in the same sensory capacity. Meaning clairaudience is the ability to hear things hear things in a psychic manner, and so forth. Or there's clairvoyance and clairsentience, and all the different senses are addressed in that. But underneath all of those, the ear isn't what hears. The ear is a machine in our body that is used to help to register information for the consciousness. underneath all of the senses, the reason why we make sense of the vibrations with our sense organs is because we have consciousness. And consciousness is bigger and grander and more, has a far greater capacity than we typically use. So that's what the topic is. That's a good starting point for the topic today. Right now, we're going to go to a quick little commercial, and then we will come back, and I've got, we'll talk more about a concept of why psychic phenomena exists. Okay, now I'm back. So, as I said, I wrote a bunch of notes on this. I'll try not to get too far afield and round and about, but I'm going to read from my notes and see. It's just I feel like it's a really important topic, and I think that overcoming fears about it would make such a big difference for so many people. So that's why I feel a certain responsibility to try to do a really good job on this. So psychic insights are not fundamentally better than other levels of perception. So if something is psychic, people usually use psychic to describe weird experiences that they can't explain. And I think that's why the word psychic has gotten a bit of a stigma around it. My book is called The Mature Empath, Stages of Developing Your Psychic and Empathic Gifts. And I went back and forth about whether or not I was going to say psychic on there. And then because I was like, oh, that's going to like be off-putting for some people. And but I ultimately decided to go ahead and use the word psychic in there because I wanted to, I guess, maybe stir the pot a little bit on that word. Because I think it's gotten to be where people who actually are very, have a lot of psychic experiences, but don't like to use that word because they lump it in with, I don't know, scammers and con artists or something, or evil things. They feel like it's evil, or dangerous. So I just am kind of reclaiming that word a little bit. But okay, so just like other levels of perception, psychic insights can be clouded and imprecise. They aren't always correct. But again, if you realize that they're not always correct, then you don't need to be fearful about that. You'll take it as just additional information, just like, again, with the hearing analogy or the seeing analogy. They've shown that, for instance, eyewitness testimony is so flawed, like it is not accurate at all because people aren't good at recognizing things clearly and remembering things with their eyes. And often, you know, someone says something and you mishear it. Like, what did you say? I didn't catch that. Right. So all of our senses are flawed and imprecise. And that can definitely be true of psychic insights as well. The importance of avoiding fearfulness and superstitious reactions to any phenomena, including psychic phenomena, is really important in general. So if exploring, learning about psychic stuff scares you, you certainly, there's no special advantage to developing that, except that it adds a richness and I think a depth of experience. In the same way with the music analogy, it's not required that you learn to sing or dance or play an instrument. But if you do, it adds richness to your life. So richness in the exploration of consciousness. So there are different kinds of heightened perceptions. So I'm going to refer to what people call psychic experiences as basically heightened experiences, heightened perceptions, meaning when we're perceiving things in a heightened perception, we are seeing a broader range of the spectrum of vibrational phenomena than we would, than we typically do. So the vibrational phenomena, meaning the sounds, the sights, all of those things, in the same way that light is on us, is there's a broad spectrum of light and we only see a narrow field of that light. There are a broad spectrum of informational fields all around us, and we only perceive a very small fraction of them typically. And it is possible to, in a sense, clean the lens a bit and unblock the fearfulness in the consciousness, in one's own individual consciousness, in such a way that you basically clean your glasses or tune up your hearing aid a bit. So dreams can be a place where heightened perceptions reveal themselves. One might have an inner sense of knowing, a gut feeling, that sort of thing. People sometimes have hear an inner voice that they can over time come to differentiate from their normal self-talk. That inner voice, I think, very probably is an aspect of one's own higher consciousness, because we are ourselves multidimensional in the same way that we only perceive a small fraction of the cosmic fields of vibrational fields, you might say, that we only perceive a very narrow field of all that is of consciousness. We only perceive usually a very narrow field of our own individual consciousness, what we might perceive, we could call our individual consciousness. So that inner voice is an aspect of yourself that is vibrating at a higher frequency, that is able to be less fettered, less held back, less blocked to perception. And so if you have a conversation, a working relationship with that, those aspects of yourself, they can provide you with help and insight. And it won't necessarily even be an inner voice. It might be all kinds of different ways that our higher consciousness communicates with us. Telepathy definitely, it is, and I've certainly had experiences with certain people of being able to just know what they were thinking and they knew what I was thinking. My friend Eve, who was on a previous podcast with me, Eve Costello, when she and I were hanging out all the time back, 25 years ago for sure, when we were roommates and we hung out all the time, and we definitely could have lengthy conversations with only speaking about every 10th word, and people around us would be both dazzled and annoyed at the fact that we were having these very intensive conversations without using very many words at all, because we were just so aligned. And you may have had that with certain people in your life. The criteria for such a kind of telepathy to work between two people is basically just that they are both open and they both have that capacity, and that they are willing to connect, that they're both equally willing to connect. And people aren't always ready, willing, or able to do that. Certainly premonitions, people might know ahead of time something that's going to happen. What I've heard from people who've had premonitions, perhaps let's say a premonition of something bad, like a car accident or something, and then the car accident does occur, and they often feel bad and guilty, like it was their fault, like somehow the premonition caused the accident, or they think that they should have been able to change the outcome. And those are not true. Basically, because time and space are really just a perceptual bias, meaning time is an illusion. And so it is possible to pick up things in the field of data that is consciousness, total consciousness. It is possible to pick up information that seems to be in the future or the past. And especially if something has a particular charge for you specifically, like let's say it's someone you care about, you know, you're going to notice it because you're going to notice it. Is it possible sometimes to prevent a bad thing that happens through a premonition? Yes, people have definitely done that. But if you're not able to do it, don't feel guilty about that. You didn't cause it. You just, any more than you would have caused it if you hadn't had a premonition. Things happen. Then I guess I'll talk about like different forms of divination, like reading tarot cards or tarot cards. I always want to say tarot because it looks like it's French, but I Google pronounced that because I always said tarot, and I know everybody says, a lot of people say tarot, and I was like, I don't know which one it is. And of course I assumed that I was correct because, you know, people tend to think they're right. And I figured tarot probably was right. But anyway, I got on Google pronunciation and it's apparently tarot. So there, now we know. Like tarot cards or using a pendulum or different things like that. Again, if you have a lot of fear about those things, then your own ego consciousness is likely to create scary things. Maybe you might have, you potentially could have scary experiences because you're afraid. So, you know, don't mess with those things if you have a lot of fear of them. There's no special, you know, advantage to it. But what it is, the reason why those tools are useful there, if you don't have a fear, is in the same way that dreams are helpful in providing messages. Because basically, the idea is that if you provide to your higher consciousness a method by which it can communicate with you, then it will. And it's trying to, your guides and your, what we call your guide, you know, what you might call your guides, which again might just be whole, you know, various levels, layers of your own consciousness, or representatives of higher consciousness of one form or another. If you provide them with a method to communicate with you, then they will. I would say, for instance, a lot of people have fears about Ouija boards. And frankly, I don't particularly care for Ouija boards either, because I think there's so much fear about them generally that they kind of hold the energy of that fear. And maybe I'm afraid of them. So that means if I have a fear about it, then that's not going to be a useful divination tool. And so, yeah, so don't use anything that you have a fear of. By the same token, don't be afraid of being afraid. If you are afraid, just notice that and go, oh, okay, well, I just noticed I've got some fear around that. You know, don't get into a feedback loop about being afraid of being afraid, because it's really not, the point is it's not about fear. And love and joy are the fundamental God level of truth. And fear doesn't, fear is something we create that creates the blocks to that pure love. Let's see. Another thing is aligning with synchronicity. When you start to pay attention to the meanings in things and look and noticing that there are signs, you get more signs. That's like, it's almost like it's the same principle of with using divination tools to communicate with your higher consciousness, or with angels or guides or God, the Holy Spirit, whatever your framework is for that higher wisdom. When you start to open up to that being a possibility, then more signs do occur, and they become, you know, more frequent and more mysterious, more like, how the heck did that happen? Kind of synchronicities. Again, because you're paying attention, you're providing your higher consciousness with a tool to communicate with you, and it will use it. Synchronicities, in one and another sense, are really happening constantly. Like, there's always synchronicities, but we aren't necessarily, you might say the whole universe is in a state of constant synchronicity. Everything is happening because of the intentions of the participants, in one way or another, or the expectations, or, you know, even if it's a bad thing, it is, there's something in the, it's not random. It doesn't mean that everything that happens is something you will like, but there's something there to learn, or there's something there to overcome or resolve. So again, as I said, divination is providing a method for communication with the divine. The divine is I like to say the divine sometimes, because it has its own baggage as a word, but I hope it's as general as possible. So that I can accommodate whatever different ways that you see that. Because I really do believe that what we refer to, what we might call God or the universe or source or whatever, is so much vaster and more incomprehensible than any of our words could possibly ever address or contain. So the analogy, the word that you use is just, it doesn't matter. But if is a meaningful word to you, then that makes it useful to you. So if you approach these kinds of communication as a sacred communication, it can be very useful, in that you can gain greater insight into a lot of things and a greater sense of peace. If you approach it with fear, your own fear will taint the results and the accuracy. It's, I think, why it's so hard to, if you're doing like a psychic reading of any kind, it's very hard to read for yourself, because it's really hard to get your own fears about your own stuff out of the way. It's also can be very hard to read for people with whom you're very close, for the same reasons. Okay, I've got, this is, I'm not going to read all of that part. I'm going to use that for something else. So if you pursue psychic abilities for their own sake, ask yourself why. Why do you want psychic experiences? I think that's a really important question, because I really think in anything that we're doing, it's important to ask, like, why do I want this? And while there's no real harm in pursuing psychic experiences just because you want a cool experience, it isn't as meaningful as doing it, as having a sense of, is there any greater purpose to this? I guess that's maybe a bias that I have, because in another way, everything, any impulse to learn or grow leads to greater learning and growth. But I think I have a little bit of a bias about that. So take that for what it's worth. I do think approaching these things as if they have a sacred purpose is better. But again, if you're doing it because, like, you're just like, well, I want to know if this, what this is about. Yeah, truthfully, that's fine. You know, basically applying sort of a scientific method attitude toward it of, I don't know if there's anything to this, but let me check it out. I think that's valuable. So, but when you do, but I, nevertheless, I do encourage you to, like, ask yourself why, what's your intention? So do you think that such abilities will make you more powerful? Are you doing it to be powerful over others, or to, if I read their minds, or if I, you know, I mean, if that's your intention, it's just gross, you know? And honestly, I'd say that, there you go. That was an unfiltered statement. Trouble with the more aware that you become about anything, what I have observed is that the more awareness you have, the faster your karma comes back. Meaning, if your intentions are not good, if your intentions are to control other people, even if you were able to do it to some extent, it would come back on you so fast, because it just, the more aware you are, the faster your karma comes back. And there's a lot of different ways to think about karma, but what I will say is, from my own experience, the more aware I've become, the more it makes a lot of sense for me to stay in my integrity as much as I absolutely possibly can, because whenever I'm out of my integrity, it comes back super fast. So do you think that such abilities will make you safer? Like, you'll be able to prevent bad things from happening or whatever? Maybe. But again, in the case of seeking power or seeking safety, doing it to seek some sort of safety, the underlying premise there is fear. Like, I'm unsafe, therefore I need to do something to become safer. So that's a fear block. And then if it's to be more powerful, then that's also, if you drill down on it, it's about fear as well, because it's based on a belief that one is powerless or one is a victim and needs to retaliate. So the idea of, like, seeking power is based on a belief in powerlessness. So in both of those, they are fear-based. So okay. So what is a good reason? Like, is there any good reason to develop psychic abilities? The reason why I even approach it and teach about it at all is because I think one of the things that really is helpful is that it gives subjective evidence to people that there's more going on in the universe than they had previously allowed themselves to notice. And that can be a great beginning point to expansion and go, wow, you know, there's really more going on. And also another value of it is that when you can begin to perceive what is going on around you with people and the universe and so forth, it's very difficult to not develop compassion, because it's very difficult to maintain really dig your heels in on judging or rejecting people. because the more you see who people are, even the people who you might not like at first, you can't really, you just have sympathy. You don't have, it's not sympathy. It's like empathy at minimum and compassion at best. So I think those are good reasons to do it. Plus it is, you know, for real, it is fun to have those kinds of experiences. It's fun. It's interesting. So there's that. So, so this is some more of what I wrote about, the fear aspect. It says, are people afraid of psychic abilities because they are afraid of being seen? So some people, and that's, I think that's it. I think there's that to some extent. Like if you're afraid of being seen for who you really are, that can make psychic abilities seem scary. Or maybe they're afraid of what they will see. And, you know, I understand that. But if you do see something with psychic abilities, you're just seeing something that was there. So, you know, you have to just ask yourself, how do you want to be able to see more of what's actually there or not? Like, do you want to, I don't know, you know, get a new prescription of glasses or keep seeing things a little fuzzy? And frankly, like, there's advantages to seeing things a little fuzzy sometimes. The more wrinkles I get, the more I go, hey, you know, I look better without my glasses on because I can't see my wrinkles. Anyway, so if the world was full of only nearsighted people, here's an analogy that I wrote up. So if the world was full of only nearsighted people, would they fear the one person who had 20/20 vision? And maybe they would, maybe, or they would be like, what, how the hell, you know, what happened to this guy that he can see so far? He must be, you know, using the devil or something, right? And wouldn't the person with 20/20 vision be thought to have some sort of supernatural power? So that's a good way of looking at the some people having more psychic acuity or ability. They're just seeing more of what's there because their particular ability to do so is just better. So the ability to sense far more than we do is already a potential in every person. So that potential is there. Because what we're really talking about is perception of consciousness. So it isn't dependent on like the physical organ of the ears and the eyes and the nose and the mouth. It's not dependent on them. Those are basically, you know, they're the sense organs that are a manifestation of the impulse to perceive, but perception itself is a communication on the level of consciousness. So the ability to sense far more than we do is already a potential in every person. You don't have to add additional abilities in order to perceive more. So there's not like a need for like a sixth sense. You only have to remove the barriers that blinds or the blockages, the filters that get in the way of perceiving in the field of consciousness. So what do I mean by the field of consciousness? I think I've been saying that a bunch of times, so I should probably break that one down. So the fundamental building block of everything is consciousness. There's certain quantum consciousness physics, which is fringy. It's kind of a fringy part of physics, but not as fringy as you might think, is proposing and and other theoretical physicists are proposing the idea that rather than matter being a vessel into which consciousness, is injected or arises, it's more that consciousness is a fundamental building block of the universe, and matter is the result of consciousness. So it turns our assumptions around. So with that in mind, everything has consciousness. The field of consciousness is the field of everything, and some of consciousness is manifest as what we experience as material stuff. So the glitch that some people are going to have is, well, that means like the rock is conscious. Well, the rock is probably not self-aware and using consciousness and experiencing consciousness in the way that we do. Like, we experience consciousness in a very, probably very special way, I'm going to guess. And of course, that's speciesist of me to think, but I mean, I don't know. We probably kind of do. Or at least, in a particular kind of distilled way that has very interesting qualities. But that's our experience of consciousness. But our experience of consciousness isn't the sum total of what consciousness is. It's just our experience of the phenomena of consciousness. So, but consciousness is the fundamental math of the universe, you might say. So that's what I mean by the field of consciousness. I mean, all the potential data that you could perceive if you had unlimited capacity to perceive would be the total field of data. And another word for the field of data might be God, or, whatever, source, great mystery. I mean, that might be a nice, I mean, the trouble with the word God is it's just so dualistic. As soon as you say God, it's almost impossible to not think of a being that is separate from the all that is. That's just falls apart immediately as an idea. So if you expand your gifts of perception, motivated by power or fear, your expansion will be limited and will quickly become distorted and unuseful. This is because power for its own sake and fearfulness are the ego's motivations. So the ego is always motivated by preventing harm and the fear of the unknown, and it's inherently very limited. So it's like if you try to do something to expand yourself, motivated by the motivations of the ego, you can see how there would be friction between the impulse to expand consciousness and the impulse to, be afraid of everything. So the ego doesn't see things as they are. It sees them as it judges them to be, based on assumptions, hopes, and fears. So there's no way to use the ego, to use ego-derived vision to see anything clearly. It'll be distorted by what the ego filters. There is also no real advantage to developing psychic abilities, except that such experiences can add to a richness of experience generally, and can help you to recognize that there are mysteries in life that you have yet to understand. And I think that's inspiring. But immediately when people have unusual experiences that are outside of what they think is possible in this realm, they always, not always, but 9 times out of 10, they'll say, oh, I had a weird experience. And I get it. It feels weird at the time. But if you get stuck in that idea of, oh, it's weird, it's weird, it's weird, then it's really not that weird. Truthfully, it's weird that we all aren't having a lot more of these experiences. It is evidence of our ability to limit ourselves, like our ability to choose to cut ourselves off from things that we aren't. Our ability to have our eyes and ears covered, as it were. So it isn't really that weird. So I would just suggest, like, realize it isn't weird. It's cool. It's awesome. It's rich, enriching, but it isn't weird. Let's see. So set an intention. This is like some advice for how to begin to open up your senses. Set an intention to use all of your senses, as well as your actions, thoughts, and words, to contribute toward peace. And then see what passions, gifts, and insights come through to you. I think that's really good advice. Sometimes I write these things, and it's my own higher wisdom that kind of is coming through when I write some of these things, and I go later, I'm like, that's really true. That's a really good point. So the more you understand about any phenomena, the better you can interact with it. Again, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about if you have a trust that a hearing aid, it makes sense, then you're not going to be afraid of it. And in the same way, if you have a way of thinking about why you're able to sometimes pick up information in a way that you're not exactly sure how you did it, if you have a framework to kind of make sense of that, your ability to interact with the phenomena improves. So the fear gets in the way, and then even without the fear, you can still expand further by having a sort of operational theory. And I say an operational theory because I for sure don't understand all of it, but I have an idea of what makes sense to me of why these phenomena exist. And that's so because I have this basic basic premises, which I'm laying out in this podcast today, it helps me to have a built-in expectation that those things are going to happen. And then when they do, I'm not freaked out. So noticing pieces of data, meaning the field of data that I'm talking about, the field of data of consciousness or the field of consciousness, noting pieces of data that most people don't notice because they are filtering them out is ultimately what you're doing when you're having a psychic experience. You're noticing pieces of data and you are making the connections between them, making sense of them in a way that most people don't notice because they are filtering them out. So that's an important point to drive home too. It's not that you have to add perception in order to have psychic abilities. You have psychic abilities and you filter that information out because you're either afraid of it or you've been told not to see it by society, as it were, because, you know, other people's fears have affected your ability to, your willingness to see. And then you become habituated to not seeing or hearing or feeling those things. Or when you do, you learn to quickly discount them. So it's not about adding, it's about removing the blockages. And the two best blockages to remove, well, no, really, not even two blockages. The one blockage from which all the other blockages arise is fear. So it feels mysterious to the psychic person too. That's true. It is a knowing that isn't easily attributed to our basic five senses, but the perceptions do share many of the qualities of senses. Smells, sounds, sights, etc. are vibrational. And they are interpreted by our physical sense organs. So our regular old five sense, see, taste, smell, hear, blah, blah, blah. You know, we have sense organs that we can point to as being why we can hear and see and whatever. But a different way of looking at it is that those sense organs are a manifestation of the impulse to perceive. And the impulse to perceive is in the field of consciousness and doesn't actually require the sense organs. So it seems to stimulate the part of the brain that recognizes visual, auditory, kinetic, olfactory, gustatory cues. So when we have psychic intuitions, we may kind of see an image in our head or hear a voice or smell something or those kinds of things. So it's using the same, it's using the data from the field of consciousness is using the same mechanisms to tell you that, or like to communicate with you. So you might think of in that way, it's almost like what I was saying with divinatory tools, like tarot cards and so forth, or runes or the I Ching or all those things. It's kind of the same way. It's like this, your higher consciousness will use the tools that you provide. And since you already have sort of built-in channels of understanding through senses, then it will use those same pathways to give you information that ultimately doesn't require actual physical ears or physical eyes, etc. So, right. So it doesn't have to come in through the physical organs of eyes, ears, skin, nose, and mouth, but it uses those same neural recognition patterns in the brain so that it can go, oh, okay, you know, so that you have a method of making sense of information. So consciousness is one unified field of vibrational information. It's possible to perceive a broader range in the spectrum of vibrational information, but we usually don't. Some people don't filter as much as others, and some are good at making sense of the additional information they are able to perceive. So that's another feature. It's like the difference between being able to play an instrument and write music, or, you know, there are some people who are better at making sense of the data that shows up. But all of those skills can be developed. And the first step of developing any skill is just a recognition of that, hey, I could be better at this. And I'm open to becoming better at this. So pitfalls and benefits of developing psychic understanding. So the pitfalls are that psychic experiences can just be another distraction. Like, oh, look at me, I'm so psychic. Or look at that guy, he's so psychic. He must be super enlightened, or I must be enlightened. Nah, it doesn't really work that way. I say this in my book too. I'm talking about this phenomenon of like, there's people who are super psychically gifted and some of them are real a-holes and some of them are awesome, you know, but I mean, it doesn't mean that you are enlightened because you have psychic abilities. Any more than being a great artist or whatever, you know, means that you're a good person. It just means you have gifts. So, you know, always, you know, reserve your confidence in people until they, you know, you feel like you can trust them. And in terms of a distraction from, so it can be a distraction from your own journey, or you can get, especially if it turns superstitious. And in this case, it's like, oh, you know, oh, I was, you know, I don't know. Just when I say superstitious, I mean fear. Because, yeah, there's stuff that happens, and maybe we'll talk about that more in future episodes. There's stuff that happens that you have to manage when you're dealing with psychic phenomena. But you don't need to be any more fearful of it than you would just be cautious at the gas station when you're pumping your gas. You know, you don't hand your credit card out to strangers. I mean, you just using common sense and not being any more fearful working in psychic phenomena than you are in any other setting. So if psychic phenomena or psychic experiences stimulate fear and superstition, then it will interfere with spiritual connection and freedom, just because, not because it's psychic, but because it's fear. Meaning anything that gets fear driving your bus, whether it's psychic or not, is going to interfere with the flow of the divine. And so, again, don't be afraid of being afraid. Just note, okay, I've got fear. So you can call upon your higher wisdom and the source of higher love and truth that you understand, and ask for assistance to clear it. And just be confident that that's like, you don't have to do anything special. The divine wants you to be happy. So if you ask for, hey, could you please help me clear this gunky blunky blunk, you will get help with it. You will. But again, it is useful because it can spark awareness that there is more going on than you might have originally assumed or that you've been taught to believe. And as I said, it's fun. Synchronicity is fun. Having interesting experiences is fun. It's very, very fun. So I am going to leave this episode for today. This is where I'm going to leave off for this episode. But I'm going to, in my next episode, I think, get into some more about the releasing of the fears and the blockages, and some techniques, or maybe I might do a guided meditation on that one. I'll figure it out, but we'll figure out the next one to do about that. And until then, thanks so much for listening. And I'd love for you to buy my book. It's on Amazon. It's The Mature Empath: Stages of Developing Your Psychic and Empathic Gifts. The book itself is a lot about when you are a light worker, some of the ways to shift in your consciousness to avoid taking on other people's gook, and some of the beliefs and that cause the blockages that get things stuck in you, and how to release those blocks. So anyway, that's on Amazon. Again, my name's Tracy Roe, TRACYROE. So if you want to go find that book, I would love you to buy it. And please leave me a message on, you can click in the, there's a thing in the show notes to click if you want to leave a voicemail and ask me a question or about anything on this topic, anything else. I'd love to answer your question on the show. So until next time, this is Spiritual, Not Religious. See y'all. Bye-bye.